AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Tuesday, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I did mention as part of the Minnesota coronavirus update that FarmFest is kicking off today. Tomorrow, they are doing a full vaccination day. That's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I've actually had to talk to a lot of journalists I know who are heading up there. I was like, be careful. Redwood County, where this is happening at, was one of the early outbreak spots that was already starting to turn with the Delta variant here in Minnesota. My guess is there's going to be a lot of people talking about how vaccines don't work and not wearing masks. Good luck. I've got to be honest with you. I'm very concerned that's about to become a super spreader event there, especially in the danger of it, too. Obviously, the amount of politicians we have going out there. You got to be careful. But with FarmFest kicking off, it's a good reminder of ours to talk about some of the issues that are affecting agriculture. And Austin Frerich is kind enough to join us. Austin's the deputy director of the Thurman Arnold Project at Yale University, an initiative that brings together faculty, staff, and scholars to collaborate on research related to competition policy and antitrust enforcement. He's also a fellow at the Harkin Institute at Drake University, a senior fellow at the Data for Progress. Austin is currently working on a book that argues for restoring the balance of power in the American food system in favor of farmers, workers, and small businesses and communities. The book is inspired by an article originally published in the American Conservative that was later republished in the Cedar Rapids Gazette. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about the finances of the ag industry. Austin, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Matt. I just want to say real quick, what you just described in FarmFest sounds a lot like Sturgis last year.
Oh, it did. And we saw what happened with Sturgis. My goodness.
Ugh. God, yeah. I mean, like, we even had people in my family had to deal with that.
Then we have the Minnesota State Fair, which comes up later this month, and this is the Delta variant is going to be interesting. I've lived for multiple times in my radio career. I have lived in rural. I've lived in Iowa twice. I lived in Eldora and lived in Ames. I've lived in Bemidji, rural Minnesota. My family comes from the Iron Range, so they've got a little bit rural up there. I'm familiar with it, but when I spent my time in Iowa, it became clear. To me, at least, that there was a fatal flaw that really kind of spun out of in my mind in the 80s when they had all the farm foreclosures, and that the larger farms started buying up all the land of the smaller farms, and once you started going down that path, it was never going to come back. I had been in small towns across Iowa where I'd seen empty main streets, which 20, 30 years earlier had been fairly vibrant, but now had 70% vacancy rates. It just seemed to me is that you can't have the corporate farming mentality in a rural environment with a limited population and have any kind of ripple success off the side. Now, once again, I'm a layman. I'm not nearly as intelligent as you are on this, but that was just my observation. It sounds like from what you have seen that this financial model that we are seeing in the ag sector is just not viable anymore.
No, I mean, what you just described is the place I love is being destroyed right in front of me, and it happened in my lifetime. I remember driving county roads in Iowa and seeing hogs when I was little, and then you wake up a few years later, and all of a sudden they're all gone.
And it is kind of one of those things where it's happened, and people keep hoping it's going to come back, and you almost want to look at this like, how? How do you think this is going to come back at this point?
So that, to me, is actually one of the most hopeful bipartisan things out there. Mm-hmm. And that is why I'm very intentional when I write this stuff to put in publications like the American Conservative. Because let me be clear, I am a Tom Harkin, Wellstone progressive. But, I mean, it's very clear that ethanol is, you know, we're in the waning days of it. And I say this as someone where ethanol paid for my college. My dad's an ethanol truck driver. But it's clear that cars are moving to batteries. And so that's half the corn crop. What are you going to do with it? To me, is the hope here is we take that animals back on the land. What we've basically seen since the election of President Reagan is the collapse of the family meat and dairy farm. First it happened in chicken, then it happened in hogs, and then it's happened in dairy, and now it's starting to happen to beef. Where basically all the, you know, you have these massive corporate farms come in, CAFOs, put the animals in these metal sheds where they never see a light of day. And then, you know, you concentrate all that money and power into a few people, and it hollows out the rural communities. And to me, this moment offers an opportunity for us to move away from that, because it's not good for rural communities. Meat tastes awful, and it's not good for our environment. That, to me, is the hope I have in this moment. This isn't rocket science.
when you talk about, and I know we you might have the actual numbers, I don't know, but let's talk about this. When you look at a percentage of animal lots that were around in an ag town, say in 1980s versus today, do you have a percentage of how many fewer that there are today than there were even 30, 40 years ago?
Yes. I actually thought you would ask that question. So I pulled up the figures from the U.S. Ag Census before you called me. We've lost about 50% of our cattle farmers, 80% of our dairies, 90% of our hog family farms.
80% of the dairies and 90% of the hog farms?
Yes.
It's interesting you bring up the hog farms. Gosh, I mean, how many times was I down in Iowa and we'd cover a hog lot that wanted to get in there? And of course, no one wants a hog lot nearby because of the smell. But it was something that was much more tolerated for a long time because the mentality is, it smells like money to me, that thing that would always say.
I want to push back on that.
Okay.
People didn't tolerate. I mean, so I wrote this article a few months ago in Vox about hog baron, where it's one man in Iowa, has 7,000 employees, owns 5 million hogs, has a private jet, home in Florida, yada, yada, yada. Wrote a $400,000 check to her governor in her last campaign. When I did, that's what I was always told was, these things just happened. But I didn't realize until I wrote this article talking with people and doing research was there was a rural rebellion in Iowa when these things were going up in the 90s. People fought it. People filled gyms. And it wasn't just, the hog family farm, who's, seeing their margin shrink and shrink because this other person's coming along cutting all these corners, which, by the way, these companies didn't get big because they just make the best hog. They got big because they're Uber. They cut every corner. They ignored all the regulations. They got big and then used their money to rewrite the regulatory system to their business model. People rebelled, but the politicians in Iowa didn't listen. They stripped them of local control.
Yeah.
I mean, even the thing I'll never forget is Tom Vilsack was governor of Iowa, ran for re-election 2002 against the lobbyists for this hog baron. The campaign, one of his big issues was anti-corporate hogs. Ran ads on these all over Iowa, promised to do something about it. Then he wins re-election against, the lobbyists for the hog baron. And then the largest expansion of CAFOs in Iowa occurred under a second term of Vilsack.
It really is, in looking at it from the Wall Street and the international trade mentality, the people that deal with this do not want to deal with individual farmers. And if they can get some guy in rural Iowa who's willing to buy up this land, they'll tolerate it because they think in business mindsets. And I can buy that completely. I mean, because we're talking how many, once again, 90% of the hog farms are gone and you got one or two major producers left. And as you said, it's the quality of the meat, the quality of the farm, the quality of the work for the employees, the quality of the product that's being produced, everything here standard as it was, but because it's just more convenient, it seems, for international financial markets to deal with something on that level. It's something that's it's welcomed, and they'll go against their own local communities to make it happen.
100%. I mean, that is – big boys like to run with big boys. Walmart doesn't want to deal with little mom and pa. They want to, deal with a hog baron. What's even funny now is they don't even want to deal with the hog baron. I mean, Costco has its own little chicken empire over in Omaha, and Walmart's playing the dairy in Indiana. I mean, is Amazon going to buy Tyson's next? I mean, who knows?
No.
But you're totally right. I mean, what's also clear with this hog baron is it was Wall Street money that, provided his jet fuel to get big.
Well, actually, can we just go back to what you just said there? Because I think there's a lot of people in the Twin Cities that probably are not aware of what you just said, that we are at that point now where corporate America that deals with high volumes of product of meat are getting into these ag sectors now. And yeah, it's no longer even the industrial ag sector. It's a Walmart, it's a Costco, it's whatever. They're the ones that are basically producing. They bought the company and they're running it and they're delivering the product themselves as a way to even make more money. But as well, it quite literally is that just corporate farm structure. There is no local mom and pop left.
No, not at all. I mean, the whole notion, though, the whole vision, I should say, the Michael Pollan thing for the last 17 years was, if you don't like this system, you don't like Tyson's at Cub Foods, Hy-Vee, whatever, you go to Whole Foods, go to some other thing. The problem is this alternative consumption thing didn't change structures. the big boys just bought the yuppie brands. You know what I mean? Like yeah. General Mills owns Annie's Mac and Cheese. Most people don't realize this illusion of choice. I mean, back in the day, Standard Oil was Standard Oil. He didn't have Rockefeller didn't have 20 little oil companies with all these different names. But now we live in that day and age where the companies do. And so you don't even know. I mean, that's the thing is, here's the thing. You shouldn't know. You have a busy life, yada, yada. It's the politicians. I mean, these were moral decisions to allow merger after merger after merger to go through. It should not have been approved.
And when you talk to politicians, let's go back to FarmFest in Minnesota. What's every politician, Democrat and Republican, doing right now is heading on out to Redwood County to go smooch the caboose of the old, all these massive corporate farms. And once again, I one of the greatest facades of all times, the greatest red herrings right now, is how every one of these massive corporate multi-million dollar farming institutions portrays themselves as just some simple ma and pa operation. And the reality is this is, in my mind, what they're doing at FarmFest is no different than if the entire delegation of all politicians from the state of Minnesota flew to Wall Street and met in some, you know, Wall Street boardroom with corporations. It's basically the same thing, only more flannel.
Yeah, I mean, this is what gets me angry is empty words. And I mean, I always use Chuck Grassley in Iowa as an example, our senator. I mean, first of all, the guy's been a senator longer than the Minnesota Vikings have been a football team. Elected official. I think he got elected his first office in 1958. I think the Vikings were founded in like 1960.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
But this all, I mean, he keeps literally every year is the same song and dance. Oh, this is bad. These markets are bad. I mean, you're seeing it right now with cattle. There's all this, you were just literally hearing the other day in Congress about, oh, this is bad. All the cattle farmers are complaining about they're being gouged. And guess what? They don't do anything. That's what bothers me. I mean, look in Minnesota alone, you have Cargill. I mean, Cargill is one of the titans here. And everyone kind of talks about, you see a lot of Minnesota politicians will talk about, oh, we have problems here, but no one will name names.
Mm-hmm.
No one will actually say what needs to be done. It's just, oh, this is a problem.
And by the way, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it just reminded me of my mom. My mom had a bakery when I was little, and she always like kind of, you know, we'd always help out, and she'd always tell me, don't do something if you're going to do it half, insert your rear end word. But that's just what you constantly see here.
And you do, and we should mention, as you talk about this in the animal farming sector, we had the same thing with Crystal Sugar up in the sugar beets that they basically, you know, a very corporate structure there that put a lot of people out of work, and they went against the union and fought that. I mean, it's very different structure here. Bringing in as well also, you know, and you talk about it's with the cow lots right now, the dairy industry in Wisconsin a few years ago was getting wiped out. Part of the problem here is that, yes, there are a lot of people in rural America who are like, this business model just can't sustain these communities. We're not getting gutted by Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Des Moines, or Omaha, or Chicago. We're getting gutted by the corporations who basically are telling us it's Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Des Moines, and Omaha, and Chicago. The reality is you got a lot of people in rural America who know this problem's going on, but yet do not want to point the finger at the real culprit, which is killing rural America, which are these large corporate farms.
I would even say they're not even American corporations anymore. I mean, the largest owner of hogs and the largest owner of pork slaughterhouse in America is WH Group of China. They own Smithfield. The largest owner of beef is JBS, a Brazil company. You can keep going down the list for yogurt, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's just a whole different ballgame. Like, we're basically destroying Iowa to provide meat to China. Or for a Chinese multinational corporation, you know, where the CEO makes $280 million, you know, and then people in Iowa are left earning like $12 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a whole other ballgame. The other thing, too, though, is you'll see this up at that farm show. These conversations aren't going to be had because what pays the bills at the farm show? It's all the Smithfield tents. It's all the Monsanto tents.
Yes.
And with the collapse of local news, I mean, like, with these, you know, what we've seen happen with all this power being concentrated in Google and Facebook, these ag publications rely on those the big ads from Smithfield. So they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. And so, like, that to me is actually a thing is, like, a lot of these stories just aren't being told. And, like, a lot of people don't even realize the extent of the issue.
Well, there's a reason, Austin, I'm talking to you, because I went to the FarmFest page and you are 1,000% correct. It's all massive corporations. I said, I don't want someone just doing a press release here, because they're not going to give me a straight answer. And so that's why I had you on the air, is because I know what we're going to talk about, what is really plaguing the ag sector and the economics behind it right now. Austin Frerick is joining us once again. He's done a great Vox article. I'll list to that. I'll list to his webpage as well, as he's working on fixing the food system. I want to get, my last question for you is, you do seem to have hope that we can fix this. What would we need to do if we want to really change the economic model and not just make, farming a more sustainable, fairer product for all farmers in rural America, but really save rural America itself from the dwindling population that eventually is just going to leave the most of this country empty?
I mean, I say this as a personal person who's a Democrat. Democrats need a vision for agriculture. They don't have one right now.
I agree.
They're just an urban party and they kowtow to what the Republicans say. And it's not just about agriculture. We need to talk about the food system. Like, people like my dad who drive stuff, people like my mom who ran a bakery, they're in the food system. Once you talk about the food system and how it should be, you're talking about 1 in 10 Americans. And that's where I have hope, is that's how you build a new coalition around these issues. Because the dirty secret about these big ag multinationals is they've hollowed out their membership, their voting base. You pull together those Adina suburban moms when you're talking about food quality for their kids at schools. You're talking about serving, local food. You're bringing in, all beef served in Minneapolis should be coming from Minnesota beef farmers. That's how you pull together a coalition. And that to me, what gives me hope is like localizing these food supply chains. It doesn't make sense with climate change, where 70% of the apple juice in America is coming from China. Like, you're literally shipping water halfway across the world. That's what's so funny about all this. It's just none of it really makes sense. And it's breaking before us. And the question is, do we have the political will and courage to move to a new, better system?
It is remarkable, because it's funny. Governor Walz, when he was this Congressman Walz down the first, he came on this show and he gave the best answer I've ever heard from the rural America about why you have food assistance programs, because I can get my product from my farmers into schools where hungry kids need it. They get paid, kids get fed, good Minnesota product, and that's that. And the reality is that, you have to have that mentality that there is this, and we just had this in the state where, what was it, Tory Westrum, the Republican senator, wanted to kill a program that allowed people on food stamps to go to farmers markets and get local, small produce, farmer produced food, because it's almost like, no, we need you to get that apple juice out of China. You're not going to be able to get this. It really is. We have a backwards mentality in this country. The DFL in Minnesota could definitely use from a much better ag policy, because the reality is you're spot on. The DFL is supposed to be Democratic Farm Labor, and they've almost completely forgotten the farm, and they need to reintroduce that, because that's what's going to save, I think, rural America.
100%. I mean, what that politician was just doing is basically doing the bidding of Cargill. They don't want you to buy anything local. They want you to buy some Cargill green, no matter where it comes from in the world. The question isn't over. You go into any Dollar General in America, and it's chips and pop, and it's whatever PepsiCo is selling. Mm-hmm. I mean, our goal now is to improve the quality of that food. I mean, it's the cheapest way to reduce healthcare costs in America, yada, yada, yada. That to me is a conversation at this point.
Austin, anytime you want to come back to my show, dude, you are more than welcome.
Yeah, sorry, we were talking like a mile a minute, but is so fun. And it's so fun to talk about this stuff.
You and I could talk. No, you and I, because I actually am 100. You and I actually are simpatico, my friend. I've lived all over the Midwest. I appreciate the farmer. It has been painful to watch old farmers look at their towns and see them die before their eyes. And the reality is, they'll say, city slickers is like, not us. Go see that big farm down the road where they got the big house, where they got the gate that you can't get in, where he tells you it's the city people. No, it's not us. It's that guy. And until I think when rural America realizes that the corporate farm is not helping them, it's hurting them far more. And when the rest of the state realizes the value of the local produce, the local product, and we can make a system that is much more efficient, I think it's going to work well. But we just ran out of time today. You come back anytime. Austin Frerick is joining us. Once again, I'll link to his webpage, the Vox article that you have done. And when you get finished on this book, you come back. By all means, we'll have you on. We'll talk more about this, okay?
Yeah, you take care now.
Take care. Austin Frerich, kind enough to join us. 952-946-6205. We'll take a quick break. Come on back, wrap up the first hour when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.